Chapter 21. Further Prophecies Until the Flood. Our last consideration of the prophetical scriptures had reference to mystical Babylon, which we endeavored to show was to be identified with the Romish Church in her long-continued degenerate and apostate condition, wherein she has proved to be increasingly unfaithful to her professed position as the Bride of Christ. Our investigations led us on rather into the realm of unfulfilled prophecies, as it became necessary to consider the fall of this modern Babylon, which has yet to take place. Although it is not within the province of these articles to consider prophecies as yet unfulfilled, we may in passing make a little further reference to the beast on which the mother of harlots is represented as being seated. It is evident that the beast outlives its rider, and for after she has been destroyed, it is said that the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him that sat on the horse and against his army. So also he is said to make war against the two witnesses, so as to overcome and kill them, and their dead bodies shall lie in the street of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt. Now we have seen that the power of the apostate church of Rome was typified of Babylon, for that great city had its seat where men endeavored to reach heaven by building the Tower of Babel, a fit emblem of false professors of Christ who seek to reach the heavenly city by their own works. But this further and last effort of the beast has its seat in the great city which spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt. Now both Sodom and Egypt are typical of the world that lieth in wickedness. They had all those elements of love and ease and pleasure, abundance in the good things of this life, independent of God, and unbelief, which characterize what the scriptures call the world. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, as they are sought after by all men naturally, so they are available in a kind of fullness in the land of Egypt, while their Pharaoh may be compared to the god of this world, the devil. The annual overflowing of the Nile seemed to give the Egyptians a kind of independence of the reign of heaven, while other nations were more dependent on God, either to send rain or to withhold it. At the same time also, the irrigations from the river Nile made the land of Egypt a wonderful, luxuriant valley extending between the Libyan hills and the Arabian mountains. It was a pleasant and fruitful land, a well-watered plain like the land of Sodom. It is remarkable how Sodom and Egypt are put into the same category in the scriptures, as affording all that is delightful to the eye and pleasing to the flesh. It was this pleasant picture that attracted Lot at Sodom when he lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. So he was allured to dwell there, although the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. Taking this view of the typical character of Sodom and Egypt, it would seem that this last effort of the beast in silencing the witnesses is to be affected rather by the forces of the infidel world than by the power of popery, since their bodies lie in the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt. It may be that the whore of Babylon, having already made herself drunken with the blood of saints and the martyrs of Jesus, is awaiting her destined doom, and that the witnesses of Christ are to be put to silence for a short period by the powers of that infidelity which has grown to such an extent in the world. We can only wait and watch and seek to know that it will be with us as promised to Daniel when he sought to interpret these mysteries. But go thou thy way till the end be, for thou shalt rest and stand in thy lot at the end of the days. It is much more important to know if we are ripe for death and eternity, which are certainly before us all, than to conjecture what may yet happen in the world before the end of time. But leaving these unfulfilled prophecies, and having already considered those which have been fulfilled concerning the various peoples and nations of the world from the beginning, it remains now to gather up some further prophecies which occur in the Scriptures, and to show how these also have been fulfilled. We will commence with those which occur up to the time of the great flood of Noah's days. And the first are those which were made after the fall of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. The great promise of the Messiah has already been dealt with, but in addition to that, we have the curses which were pronounced. The very ground was cursed for man's sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, till thou return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. To this very day all men are witnesses to the fulfillment of this early prophecy. Man goes forth to his labor day by day in order to obtain the bread which perisheth. Labor and sorrow and the sweat of the face attend him continually in his endeavors to obtain food, home and clothing, and other necessaries of life. The ground easily yields the thistles and thorns and numerous weeds, which serve to increase the labor and toil required in the production of food. Man is continually endeavoring to lighten these labors by the invention and use of agricultural machinery, tractors and the like. But the labor remains, and he can do nothing to obliterate it. How true also has it been through all ages that man, who was made out of the dust of the earth, returns to dust again. Death comes to all, and the body decomposes and crumbles to dust, nor is there any escape from this dissolution. The sorrow appointed to women also in the birth of children has continued through all generations to the present time. I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children. No skill or wisdom of men has been able to prevent the fulfillment of this further early prophecy. When later on Cain rose up against his brother Abel and slew him, God said to the murderer, "The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground." It was in this way that the blood of Abel spoke and crieth to God from the ground for vengeance. Subsequently, this was made a general law, which the crime of murder naturally called for. Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. He that smiteth a man, so that he die, shall surely be put to death. This divine prediction and appointment has also been true to the present time, although some men, especially in these godless days, wherein the injunctions of Scripture are ignored, wish to abolish capital punishment. But to do this would be to resist the just appointment of God, and must issue only in an increase of these fearful crimes. Then there is the subjection of the lower creation to man, as a head having dominion over them. The fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth, and upon every fowl of the air, upon all that moveth upon the earth, and upon all the fishes of the sea. Into your hand are they delivered. Every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you. This was the prediction made after Noah had come forth from the ark, and to the original subjection of the animal creation to man was added this further fear and dread, that they should be liable to be killed to supply him with food. This state of things we see has also continued in fulfillment of the divine appointment. Now we come to the promises which were made to Noah and his sons after the flood. I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake, neither will I again smite any more everything living as I have done. While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease. And I will establish my covenant with you, neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of a flood, neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth. How faithful has the great Creator been to this his gracious promise, so that in spite of man's wickedness in all ages, there has been no flood to destroy all the earth, and the appointed seasons, with seed time and harvest, have continued down to the present day. Then there is his wonderful token of this covenant. This is the token of the covenant which I make between me and you, and every living creature that is with you, for perpetual generations. I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come to pass, when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. Has not this promise been fulfilled, and this token of the Lord's faithfulness been continued through thousands of years as a constant witness against the infidel and the unbeliever and to the truth of his written word? The harmonious colors blended in the beautiful rainbow as it spans the heavens before us sweetly and suitably represents the mercy and long-suffering goodness of the Lord in this gracious promise, as set against the black cloud of his wrath, which the wickedness of man justly deserves. Here then we have a further heap of witness as to the fulfilling of divine predictions and appointments as an evidence of the inviolable truth of the sacred scriptures.